Sid, Madge is an anomaly. And for that reason, I've decided to not edit the podcast interview and to record it from the get-go when he picks up the phone. So bear with us in the first few seconds as we compare pets, him with his cute dog, Bilbo, and me with my massive selection of plants that I surround myself with. Yet for me, Sid is hugely inspirational. His words of wisdom are very much needed in our world today and make a profound impact, not just on a global level, but individually as well, every single day. Because every day we can change someone's world, even if it isn't the world in itself.
Welcome to the Strong Voice Podcast, a podcast committed to bringing you the voice of the brave and the pioneers who are stepping up to follow their true path and creating some positive ripples in the world as they do so. I'm Kate Strong, your host, and we cover a wide spectrum of topics because life is full of variety. What I've learned along my journey is that we gain so much more inspiration from listening to different paths and perspectives. And if you're like me, working hard today with some fun thrown in to ensure tomorrow is brighter, then you'll gain a lot from this podcast series.
Can you see me?
I can. Hello.
Look.
Oh.
It's Bilbo.
What's his name?
Bilbo.
Oh,
great. As in Baggins.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, my babies are more green. I'd go for plants. Oh, you can't see. This I grew from an avocado seed.
Really? Wow.
When you get an avocado, I just put it in water, sprouted it. And then this is Adam. His sister, Maria, I had to give away because she was taller than I was.
No way.
Yeah, she just... So I just gave it to someone in Cornwall because they're warmer. So hopefully they'll be able to harvest some avocados.
Wow, that's so cool. Have you been rioting? I need to check that off first.
Have I been whatting?
Rioting.
No.
No. Promise?
No. I have signed the Don't Ban Riots thingamajig, though.
Have you? Don't ban riots?
Yeah, they're trying to pass something in Parliament that you're not allowed to, by law, riot.
Oh, really?
Mm.
I predict a riot. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it depends on the colour of the person, because obviously if black people, so over 100 blacks, that's a riot. Over 100 whites, we're just purely expressing our opinion. So I think it's a little bit rude.
I didn't realise they were trying to do that. Ban riots. Whoa. But the nature of a riot isn't like that. I mean, that's like, I'm going to ban spontaneity. It's like, oh, okay, let's all flatline. That's mad. Isn't it? A riot's because you're just pissed off and you want a riot. You don't kind of go, it's Thursday, no, it's not rioting day. Oh, it's Friday, it's riot day. Come on, let's go, you know.
It's so subjective, you know, because to somebody else, it's a movement. It's a way of standing to change something that's archaic and needs a little bit of a ruffle under the feathers. So, yeah, I haven't rioted, but I've signed the right to riot if I so choose or feel like it later.
Have that as a caveat. You're so contract to life. I can, like 10.1.1 says that if I feel inclined, I may riot.
Yeah, exactly. Have you, why do you ask, by the way?
Oh, because there's riots in Bristol. There were riots in Bristol, in your Bristol.
Yes, fair play.
And I put 2 and 10 together and got 3. And then that was it. And I thought you'd be out there, you know, with your balaclava and you're kind of like, you know.
I got half of it right. So,
you know. Yeah. You're nearly there.
Yeah, I don't watch the news or anything. I had an interview last week for something or other, doesn't matter. And she asked me, what are your thoughts of Hannah? And I went, I'm really sorry. I have no idea what you're talking about. A lady was walking home from somewhere and she was abducted and murdered.
Oh, yeah. In Clapham Common. Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, that's horrific. My thoughts are, can we focus more on the people doing this rather than the victims? Because I don't need to do anything different to be safe. Sort, you know, them out. But I had no idea what she was talking about. I felt really bad, but...
Yeah.
That's but the thing is, news.
I know, but that it's like, how much news do you then consume? It's like, you know, that's a murder that's happened in London, but there are other murders that are happening on a daily basis, not just in London, but everywhere else. And then you kind of go, well, okay, then do I think about Brazil and, you know, all those things that happen in Colorado, Mexico? And you kind of go, I can only do this. This is it. Mm. You know, otherwise it's like, you know, where do you want it to stop?
Yeah. I volunteer for two charities in Bristol. One of them is it's a new charity, helps refugee women and women saved from slavery. And, you know, they're still actively saving women from slavery today and saving women from FGM today. And we're talking about Bristol. We're not talking about Brazil or Afghanistan. We're talking about Bristol. And I'm like, that I will deal with. That I will stand up and go, I'm an ally. What can I do?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I appreciate the world is much bigger, but that's my element of control. I don't need to watch the news to be told BS and try and sift through the positivity through that.
I mean, when I played golf many years ago at a club where I used to live.
You were allowed to go out and get socialising.
yeah, in Life Park, 1.1. And I remember I was playing with this guy and we just got onto the subject of kind of like, as blokes do, you know, what do you do for a job? And he said, oh, I'm a retired counsellor. And he used to be something else before that. And I said, oh, right, what did you counsel? And he said, oh, you know, kind of domestic stuff. And I went, oh, all right. And the place that I lived in was a little village called Llandarval, which was no more than, you know, I don't know, less than 1,000 people. And then this other village kind of called Chinwids was roughly about half the size, so about 500. And he said, my patch, he said, was kind of Chinwid and a few other kind of, you know, kind of little villages. And he said, it was over 75% child abuse, he said, in that area. And I was like, what the f-?
That's just the ones you hear about.
And I just like, you know, when you have that kind of like brick wall moment, I was like, what? And he said, yeah. He said, in the rural communities in Wales, you know, he said, it is absolutely rife. He said, because limited access to things to do, passed down generation to generation. I know. I mean, how do you square that circle? And I was just like, and that's the thing I find is that I can't look out there because unless I can put my shit in order and then, you know, my children and I can be the best dad and all that kind of stuff, I can't get involved in other stuff. I find that really hard.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I'm a cliche of a bicycle or a cyclist in that if I'm not centered, I'm going to be off squiff everywhere. So I'm just like a bicycle. I need to make sure I'm in my zone. I'm in my comfort zone. That doesn't mean I'm waiting for the £1 million, but as long as I've got my head screwed on, then I can support. Otherwise, I just get overwhelmed. It's like the world is crying out for attention and help. And I just want to sometimes cry.
And you should look, and then you can kind of sort of get sucked down that chute, can't you? And you know, I find with the stuff that we're doing, you know, in kind of FE and with schools and stuff is that, you know, these poor kids, they're like, they can't even find a reason to get up in the morning. And you kind of go, guys, let's just start there. I get charity abroad and, you know, it's very sad, lots of things around the world, but we're f***ed up so much in this country. You kind of go, surely that's where we need to play in a way. Anyway, there we are, sidestep, but yeah.
And that's why I want to, you know, thank you so much. Like, well, by the way, none, all of this is recorded, so all of it will be in the podcast. But thanks so much for agreeing to be on this podcast because these conversations, they're not comfortable, but we need to have them. And that's why I want us here is for you to hold me accountable as well as me to you and also just remind society that it isn't, when, you know, Wi-Fi speed is the least of our things we need to put on our agenda, albeit still important.
Yeah, definitely. And it is that. It's interesting, actually, because the ME program is 6 on Thursday. And it wasn't like I suddenly kind of, you know, it wasn't kind of that boom moment where you kind of go, right, I'm going to start it on this, you know, on the 26th or wherever it was, you know, March. You know, it just sort of so happened that it was that particular day where the company was incorporated and stuff and all the rest of it. And it's really funny because you kind of, like, you think of a child or you think of yourself in, like, 6 years old, and I think of where we're at and I think of what it's asked of me. And I was writing the sort of, not that it's some big announcement because who gives a shit, really, but I just kind of wrote down that journey that I've had, you know, in the 6 years. And because of the nature of what we do and just the kind of things that I've learned. It's just been a fascinating, like you, like the other day when we were talking about like the training for the your bike ride. And it's the event is the event, get that. And that's the 24 hours. But in a way, that's sort of immaterial, isn't it? It's all of the other stuff, the support that you get from friends and family and the emotional thing. And I mean, how many calories was it again that you
17,500.
And all of that stuff is
need that much.
I know. If you were to put that in front of you, that's like bonkers, isn't it? But it's all those. So for the 6-year journey, it was really a case of it's not any one moment, it's not any one thing. Like I went to number 10 Downing Street, met Lord Young. It's none of that. It's just all of those micro little moments that so it's like those little grains of sand, isn't there, that just keep you sort of hopefully building in the right direction and kind of doing stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, it's the 25th, by the way, on Thursday, not the 26th.
Good. But that's good to check. Hang on. My sense of calendar's gone. I just checked that it is. No, it's the 26th. It's Friday. It's our birthday. There we go. So it definitely is the 26th. So there you go.
Thank you. I'm on the calendar till like June 2022 at the moment. So I'm like, hang on, we've got a disconnect here. I need to just make sure it's squared away. But like, bring us back to the 26th. Why did you start me program in the first place?
Well, I was giving a talk. I was asked by the Welsh government to go into schools to do a talk about kind of being an entrepreneur, and it's called Big Ideas Wales, which is basically starting your own business and stuff and trying to help people be more entrepreneurial. So I was in this school in Wrexham, about, kids 15, 16 years old, I don't know, 20, 30 in a class. And I'd got this really cool slide deck kind of, prepared with Elon Musk, Branson, and, why we have to think differently and stuff and how you can create your own future, yada, yada, blah, blah. And I've used this word. So I've been a branding consultant for, 20 odd years. And when I used to go into businesses, I asked them a question. So what one word did you describe your brand? And then you would then look at all the stakeholders and compare the kind of, the results and kind of go, well, you think you're really, proud and everyone thinks you're arrogant. So we need to fix the kind of the perception and the reality. So I just thought I'd ask these kids, so what one word did you use to describe yourself? And there was a young lad sat on my right hand side. And I said to him, I'm a bit kind of like, I like using my hands, I'm a bit energetic. And I said to him, so what's your word? And he said, weirdo. And I just said, oh, brilliant. Oh, what a brilliant word. And he just sat there blankly and just went, no. He said, I'm bullied. I don't fit in at school. I don't get education. I don't want to be here. And again, it's that brick wall moment. And I just went, oh, hang on a minute. I said, all right, well, let's just park that thought and let's go around the rest of the class. And about 20% of them said abnormal, freak, misfit, weirdo. Yeah. These words, and I'm going, well, hang on a minute, that's 20%. That's a lot of kids in here. And the other words weren't overly kind of, enthusiastic. So I sort of thought, well, I've got all these amazing slides to talk to them about being an entrepreneur. Well, you're never going to get to that if you think that. So we started to discuss difference and why do we think the way that we do. And I divided the room into half and said, right, you guys on the right here, you're all Welsh and you're on the left, you're English. What do you think of each other? Let's have an exchange of thoughts. Yeah, you can imagine what it's like. Especially after the rugby and the Six Nations and stuff. And then I said to them, right, well, there we go. Now change size. They changed size. And I said, right, let's have the next, let's have the thoughts. And they were quiet. They just sort of went, oh. I said, exactly. Your perception of your reality and your creative difference, et cetera, is where you are in life and where you've been, your upbringing and all the rest of it. And then we talked about the fact is that a border is just a fictitious kind of line that nobody, and it's interesting seeing the map behind you, which is fantastic. All of those borders and those things, they don't exist, but they do because man has given them some kind of meaning. So for the rest of the session, we discuss difference, meaning, love, thinking. Oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff that we did. And we all agreed at the end of the session that we're all freaks and misfits and weirdos and what a wonderful world it was. So after kind of that session, my daughter was exactly the same age, about 15 at the same time. And I was just thinking, do we really have that kind of thought? And then did loads of research on suicide rates, on self-harm, on anxiety, depression in the developing world and, communities in which I was living in and stuff. And I was absolutely horrified. And I thought, there's just no way that if my mission on this world is to kind of leave my little bit of my world in a better place, I'm not going to do that if I continue being a brand consultant and everything else. So I thought, well, why don't I just create some exercises and think and to get people to shift that thinking? And then that was 6 years ago when, you know, what we had, I don't know, 20,000 people through the program and more. We've press coverage of over, I think, 20 million people. And, you know, and on it goes. And that's how it started, really. It was a crazy social experiment just to see if we could help people shift thinking. And we've been in prisons. We've been in some of the biggest brands in the world. And that's what we do, really.
Yeah. And I mean, you've sent me the book and I've got it here. It's like Me in a Minute and it's 60 Ways to Improve Your Life in 60 Seconds. And what I love is they're so simple. We don't need money. We don't need anything except a reframe of what we see in the front, in the face of what we're looking at. If I'm having a down day, how can I make it a positive? And it can be as simple as that. But it's about, as you said, spinning it out as well, making sure the person next to me is supported. I might be fine, but that isn't a win for community. If my neighbours are suffering, how can we keep helping others and keep that, like, our eyes open and looking after ourselves at the same time?
That's really lovely. And you're right. And the thing is that we get to a stage in life when we just overcomplicate everything. You know, I mean, the world is in a mess. I mean, in many parts is in a mess because we just overcomplicate. You know, the essence of life is really simple. You know, go back to the philosophers of kind of 2000 years and before and the early thinkers. And you kind of go, it was the same stuff. It's like, keep, you know thyself, keep stuff simple, you know, love, the essence of values. We've just mixed it all up, and it's just like, and that's why I wanted to write the books in such a simple way, just to kind of go, look, I mean, there's a great saying, isn't it, which is KISS, which is keep it simple, stupid. And it's so true. It's like, no, and I think of my children, of which I'm very fortunate to have four. You know, Lily's 22, Freddie's 4, Beatrice is going to be 3 in a couple of weeks' time, and, you know, Florence is 1. And the essence to them is, and I've learned so much from them, is that they it's joy, it's like happiness, it's kindness. You know, and when people talk about trust, it's not about the big kind of, you know, volcanic explosion of trust. It's in those tiny little details where, you know, B was sick in my bed, you know, the other night, early in the morning. And it's the fact that, you know, me as an adult doesn't get annoyed. It's the fact that you comfort and that you change the sheets and you give a medicine. And it's all of that micro little moments in life that make up the big whole. And again, it's if we focus on those and make sure that we're at our best and being at our best and want to be at our best in those micro moments, then the rest of the stuff sort of fixes. I mean, it fixes itself, doesn't it, really? Well, I think.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I can look at it in my life, like I can look at it in sport or business, but, you know, if I focus on the gold or the big medal or the big award, or, you know, I'm going to make this relationship the best ever, it's made up of, as you said, those grains of sand. And unless I'm focusing every day on those grains of sand, forget the big thing at the end. My partner's going to leave me or become toxic, and or my I won't even get my career started. We have to focus on the small. Yeah. And that's where the goal is.
And I'm a big fan of kind of cookery and MasterChef. And I remember watching Celebrity MasterChef, I think it was last year, and Matthew Pinson was on it. And I love Matthew Pinson, Stephen Redgrave, and all the things that they you know, achieved in kind of rowing and Olympic history. But one of the things I loved about Matthew was that he was, I think, in the semi-final, the quarter-final, and you know, is it Jonty or what's his name? Can't remember his name, but one of the judges was talking to him and saying, don't you get nervous? And Matthew sort of said, well, actually, not really, he said, because when I was training, he said, our coaches just said, stick to the process. Go through the motions of what you need to do. He said, don't worry about the end result, because that's the end result. Just stick to the process. And I loved that about him, and I loved that about the program. I mean, he didn't win, but I mean, he got very close to kind of, you know, I think he got into the final. But I took that away and thought, he's right, that all you need to do is to focus on the process. Don't worry about the big stuff out there. You know, do what's next.
Yeah, we could become overwhelmed. Like we were just saying earlier about the world needs a big shakeup in so many areas. And if we focus on all of that, I'm just going to be paralyzed by, yeah, you know, fear, basically, and overwhelm. But if we look at that one person, that one day, that one child when you go to school, or that one prison offender who wants to rehab but doesn't know the first steps, that's where we can make a world of difference. And that's how we change the world, as one person at a time.
Yeah, I love that saying there. We just said the world of difference. And you're right, it is. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, lovely.
So, like, I'm always curious about Me in a Minute and businesses similar to yours, because you're not just creating a life for yourself and your family, but you're also creating a difference and a movement almost around what you stand for. And I'm going to ask a very basic question, which is how do you do it? But I'm always intrigued in how you bring the world of making a change as well as the traditional world of making money and your life work and be compatible together.
That's a brilliant question. I mean, it's very difficult. And you know, having a great purpose and a kind of calling is fantastic, but you can't make money out of that. You know, it doesn't keep you fed and your kids kind of off the streets and stuff. And I found that really hard because I'm all about, I've never been motivated by money, but I now understand the importance. I now call it, I call them goodness tokens. And I always say that the more goodness tokens we make as a business, the more goodness that we can do kind of further afield. So in the last year or so, I've really kind of looked at the numbers and thought, no, come on, Sid, you know, we need to think about, you know, how we make this, you know, more commercially available to bigger companies, organizations, because they've got bigger money. And then we can then translate that into kind of more community projects. So that's kind of how I see it, really, of trying to materialize. So basically, I suppose to share the good in a way is that, you know, when we're working for a big corporation, the money we charge them is as good as it gets. You know, I mean, I would say that the classes and the workshops that we run, they're up there with the best. And I did a Henley coaching course year and a bit ago. And one of the reasons why I did it was because I wanted to get into a kind of academic, I'm not very academic, but I wanted to get into an arena and kind of really test what we were doing. And it's as good as any other stuff that I was, you know, kind of, shown and stuff. So yeah, it's much more of there's a huge philanthropic part to this, of trying to make the world a better place. But ultimately, you know, when you look at Bezos and you look at all those people, you know, you look at a company like BrewDog. I mean, BrewDog's a wonderful company, but they knew their numbers. They knew that they needed to be commercial and all that kind of stuff. And I needed to get into that a year ago. So,
yeah. And I think it's what it's something that I know you're very passionate about. It's the energy behind that as well. When you know that even the work you're doing for the commercials is making their world a better place and helping the individuals within that to ask questions, you're operating with that conscious choice. That's working with.
That's really nice. I like that thing about conscious choice. And we've been working with, you know, one of the world's best known kind of, you know, luxury retail brands. And, you know, I mean, they're what, 200-300 years old. And what's been beautiful about working with them is that, you know, when I think of the work we've done in prisons, there's no difference between the chairman of this organization to the person who's in prison, to the child who doesn't want to kind of get up in the morning. We're all the same, made of the same energy and matter. There's no difference. My energy is different, but I can change that. You know that through all the wonderful work that you've done in terms of sport and stuff and being an advocate for some really cool causes. And I think people kind of forget that too, that they think that just because you're a chairman, you've got it sorted. No one's got it sorted. And I think it's, we can shift that energy. We can shift that kind of focus and stuff. And it is really simple, as you said earlier, it really is.
Yeah, so what do you do every day to make sure that your energy is focused in the right spaces?
One thing that I've really learned over the last year is I don't ever give myself a hard time. And it was really brilliant the other day when we had a chat. And I'm much the same as you, which is like, if I have a day where my mojo is kind of a bit dull or it's blinking, I don't give it a hard time. I just go, it's okay, mojo. You know, tomorrow's another day, or we'll just ride this one out. I mean, I do exercise. I like to exercise. So I wild swim, I run, you know, I cycle, do a lot of walking and stuff. There's a brilliant book actually called The Untethered Soul by a guy called Michael Singer. And I think it's in the third chapter. He talks about this. It's a brilliant question, actually. And he says, do you want to be happy? And it's such a basic question. And I kind of read that a few years ago and I kind of went, yeah, you're right, I do. So for me, it's every day. If I want to be happy and I want to bring joy into my life and other people's lives, what do I need to do to incrementally kind of move that forward? So for me, if I do have a bad day where I'm not great, you know, whatever, I roll with it. It's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't define me. It's just a moment that I need to, it's like weather. It's just a passing moment, really. So that's my big thing. And the other thing is just do what's next. Don't worry about the size of the elephant, just take one bite and eventually the elephant's eaten. Not that I will eat elephants because I'm a vegetarian, okay? But you know what I mean? It's the analogy in that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like what you're saying is hilarious because the world conspires in mysterious ways. And what you're saying is pretty much verbatim what I needed to hear and what was said about half a day ago, because I beat myself up for beating myself up and then beat myself up for taking so long to beat myself up. So there's this compounding of beating myself up where I could have just beaten myself, like had a bad day and just moved on. It would have been a lot less impactful than the half day I decided to sit there continually whipping and lashing myself because I felt I needed it. It's hilarious.
It's mad. But it's mad. I mean, when you think of like the human mind and the, you know, it's like the film, isn't it? Beautiful Mind. You think of all the wonderful things that it creates, but also the destruction that we go through on a daily basis. People kind of think that, when people talk about anxiety and depression, and I've had all of that stuff, you know, and I still do, you know, but it's like, it's there, it's real. And people kind of go, oh, don't get depressed. It's rubbish. Everybody gets depressed. Everybody gets anxious. It's just how we deal with it is what defines the quality and the quantity of life that we get.
Yeah, it's hugely relevant. And I'm curious to know what you think about mental health, because again, we've been in lockdown. This is the 1 year anniversary of UK lockdown as well.
Happy birthday.
Yes, happy birthday. And my birthday was yesterday, so I was the last day of freedom.
Wow,
so,
it's your fault then.
They saw me coming and thought, not for next year, she's got to be locked in. But there's a lot of talk around mental health and people, you know, being in isolation has triggered a lot of things that potentially we could have suppressed or hidden by going to the pub or getting busy, and we haven't got those distractions. What's your thoughts between mental health and emotional health and potentially the differences between the two?
Brilliant question. I think that emotional intelligence, emotional health, I think that is the foundation of, that's a lot of the teachings that we do in terms of the ME program, positive psychology and stuff and all the rest of it. And, you know, when you look at emotional intelligence, you know, if you think about emotional, what kind of self-awareness, self-regulation, empathy, motivation, you know, kind of, I don't know, social skills and everything else, all of that mental health. So when you look at, because people talk about mental health when they don't talk about physical health or they don't talk about spiritual health. Well, all three things are linked. I mean, you cannot be physically strong and healthy without having, you know, decent mental and spiritual health. It doesn't work that way. So when people kind of, and it's great that people have kind of highlighted mental health. And, you know, there was a great statistic years ago, wasn't it, that 1 in 8 people suffer from mental illness. No, 8 out of 8 people suffer from mental illness. You know, let's just put that on the kind of register. And the fact is that, you know, we're all affected by this. But when you look at the profiles of people, you know, whether it's Nancy Klein or Robin Sharma or any of those kind of great thinkers, or even kind of Louise Hay, the great thing about them was, is they had great self-awareness and self-regulation. They had all of those emotional intelligence attributes that constitute healthy, you know, mental, physical and kind of spiritual health.
Yeah, it's so true. And coming back to what you said about energy, to put it in the physical language, energy can't be created or destroyed. So if I'm feeling one emotion, I can't take it away. It has to be always present. It just comes in different forms. So we've proven by our own scientific laws that it has to be present in some form or other, and denying it is going to create that imbalance, which is where that cliff edge is created and we fall in the gap. So we have to acknowledge it's always present. Otherwise, we're denying a part of our own being, which is
just brilliant. That's brilliant. And you know what's really interesting? I mean, my daughter Lily told me something years ago, and she said that if you bury your feelings, you bury them alive. I know. And it was a real kind of like, you know, was it? I don't know what was that. I can't remember the film. Comes to me in a minute. But and I kind of really thought about that, and I thought she's right, because when, you know, when we think about kind of anxiety, it's in the tummy, isn't it? In the chest, all that kind of stuff. And you're right. I love that. The fact that you cannot destroy energy and that negative, whatever that energy is, shallow grave, that was the one. And wherever you put that, it goes somewhere, doesn't it? And eventually, I mean, I always think, you know, because people sort of say to us, you know, are you counselors? No, we're not counselors, because I don't want to go into people's, what I call the hurt locker. It's the past is the past. And yes, there's stuff, there's trauma, you know. Dr. Gabor Mate talks about it all about, you know, huge, great trauma and how that affects us kind of later in life. Well, if we choose to kind of live in that treasure chest of kind of trauma and all the rest of it, that energy doesn't, it's not going to go nice places. So it's almost like recognizing that and kind of moving on from it, and not to leave it buried, but to kind of just to create some awareness and kind of go, yeah, all right, you know, shit happens. What do I do about it?
Yeah. it's not, we're not that identity. Like, we, you know, you're a father, you're a business owner, you're a lover, you're a friend, you're a neighbor, you're a stranger. Why do we identify to one aspect of that as if that's all we are?
That's brilliant. Yeah. 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 And it is that thing, isn't it, about kind of my own personal view versus the world view. I only see the world through my eyes and through my world. Well, change your perspective, talk to somebody else. And I think that's what's lovely about, you know, doing podcasts like this and just kind of sharing perspective and kind of going, well, I never thought of it that way. Or how about reading this or listening to this? I love that.
Yeah. And we've all had it. I mean, in the UK alone anyway, most of the world as well, we've had a great opportunity to reframe our neighbourhood. Because 9 times out of 10, we unconsciously and blindly drive to work, drive back, don't even notice the last 250 metres of our house, if not more. We've had to get to know it again, and we've had to find elements of joy within it because we're not allowed anywhere else. So I really hope we've embraced it as opening our eyes and going, now's the time to get excited about the mundane. Now's the time to see my neighbour in a different light and find out, what did they do with their 24 hours? Because it wasn't the same as me. Find out different perspectives.
That's brilliant. And I think one thing that's really highlighted it for me is that I've just had for the last year, I've just had a series of groundhog days or weeks. And what's really nice is that it's almost like, you know, the Bill Murray situation where you have to reset, and that every day, yes, it's all become very samey. But one of the questions that I've really enjoyed answering of myself is that, what is it telling me about me? So when I'm reacting adversely to being locked down or being kept in or not being able to go out to the cinema or theatre or whatever that is, why? What is it telling me about me? Why am I behaving and reacting that way? Mm. And every day I get to play that out again, and it gets better because I'm going to go, okay, yeah, that's just highlighted something. So there's a bit of work needed there. I mean, I have really enjoyed lockdown, and I'm sure that, you know, people would be throwing stuff at me, but I've enjoyed it because it's that reset. It said to me, the life that you had, Sid, wasn't great. You now got a great opportunity for years, one long, and nobody knew it was going to be a year, obviously. Huge amount of reflection. And what do you want to do better? How do you want to be better? And I think for that, it's been a blessing. I really do.
Yeah. And what you just said is really powerful, because you didn't go into your hurt, not locker, and drag all of that out. But if you saw something prodding through and you wanted a smooth surface, you could deal with that pinprick and go as deep as you wanted in that one isolated area.
Brilliant.
Constantly and protected. So yeah, it sounds like you really did it with mindfulness to make sure you set yourself up to win as well throughout that.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it came, everything comes at a price, doesn't it? And, you know, tears, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, also waking up and kind of not just... just again, as I said a number of times, mojo went, and I had it actually recently for about 2-3 weeks where I just felt absolutely flat. I had no, the energy just wasn't there. And what I found was that, well, Bilbo, my dog, was ill. He'd swallowed some fishing hooks and stuff, so he had had an operation. So he was feeling pretty flat. So both of us kind of felt the same. But again, it was thinking, well, okay, so what is it? Why is it? And like years ago, I would have gone into panic. I would have gone into extreme modes of pushing myself into sports and kind of doing stuff. But I just sat with it and I lived with it and I went through the process. And again, you know, the Matthew Pinson kind of thing, which is just stick to the program, stick to the process. Mm. It will go. And it did, you know, and again, that energy shifted. I mean, I wasn't doing a lot of delivering. A lot of people, because we've got facilitators who deliver on behalf of our program. I wasn't having a lot of kind of screen time. And I really miss that. I miss sharing that energy with kind of people to help them kind of on their journey. And I think that's part of it. I like to give. And I wasn't doing much giving. I was just being.
And that's an amazing, you know, realization, because I'm sure if you didn't have that moment and ironically the space to realize you missed it, you wouldn't cherish it now that you've got it back.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's fascinating. You know, we're delivering a program, you know, a new program called Fuel, and you know, that's to hundreds of kind of young people. And what's really lovely is just what they're getting from it. It's just I can't think of anything bigger. I couldn't think of a prize. I couldn't think of a possession bigger than somebody saying, I've now got a life plan. I now believe in who I am. I now understand who I am. And we've had all of that. And it's just flipping amazing. It's the most, you just don't get any more. It's like, okay, so this might sound really nuts, but my kids, as I said, I mean, are young and Lily's, you know, university and stuff. But I mean, I'm sadly separated, and that happened during COVID as well, which was really difficult. I got home one day and my partner was living with her parents because they got a farm not far from here. And I arrived home and I was on my own. And it was a solicitor's letter saying I had 2 months to leave the home. Yeah. So I had to go and find somewhere to kind of go and live, which was, again, huge challenge. But, you know, one does. Anyway, so I see my kids on a Sunday evening and they come and stay. And last Sunday they came. And as Freddie, because he's four and B were getting out the car, they said, don't forget the flowers. Don't forget the flowers, mummy. And they had picked me some daffodils from, you know, their grandma's kind of garden. And, you know, I've got them on the kitchen, you kind of window shelf. And do you know what? It's the greatest present I think anyone has ever given me, because I know, one, they picked them, and two, they obviously, you know, my ex-partner, she had flowers, but they specifically wanted me to have these flowers from there, from that garden. And it is like, wow. And that is, and again, it's that joy of just something so very simple that you can receive, but also give, that I think we just underestimate.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful gift.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me a little bit more, because you've barely touched on the actual deliverables that you offer through the Me program. And to tell you the truth, I'm not that interested in them, because I'm much more interested in the results. Because as you just said, that's where the magic happens. You're taking an individual on a journey who's potentially resigned to those results. What else? Can you share any other sort of success stories, be them with adults or kids, that you've had?
Well, I'll tell you what, there's an amazing, I'm just looking this up now. I'm not avoiding you, honestly. I'm just looking up. So fuel is 10 hours. So it's either 5 lots of 2 hours or it's 10 lots of 1 hour over 10 weeks or 5 weeks, and it's self-serve, whatever it is. So this one particular session we've been doing, and we asked people just to, in the chat box, you know, because there's a lot of this, you know, interactivity, chat box kind of thinking and stuff and all the rest of it. So I just asked them, you know, what did they think of the program? And this young lady who had started the program, you know, 5 weeks previous at a really low ebb, I mean, and you're talking a very low ebb. So this is what she wrote. I want to take away that I can literally do anything with the mind I have. Learning is the most powerful act you can do, and you learn every day. The more interactions you have, the smarter you become, because you're interacting with all different kinds of people of different faiths, beliefs, and background. My attitude is what matters the most. My response shapes me, not other things or people.
Mm.
And that is like, I mean, this is a girl who's 17 years old in a very, very difficult, you know, social and economic kind of, you know, area. And, you know, 10 hours, that's it. So 10 hours of a course. And we, you know, I always likened it to kind of if Walt Disney had met Steve Jobs or Apple, they would have created something like this Me program, because it's such fun. It's so interesting. You know, we entertain people and then they learn stuff, as opposed to trying to educate them and hoping it kind of sticks. And it's things like that, you know, that are just amazing. And, you know, when we've been into prison, you know, we had one man who had been in prison for quite a few years. And he said when he started the course, and we'd gone through, I mean, I'd gone into Wrexham prison, which is Bowen prison, which is, I think, one of Europe's biggest prisons. And I'd done this kind of 20-minute talk. So they basically, I think we only allowed 10 men in the room. So I did 10, you know, series of talks, and we recruited from that. And this one man started on this 5-day course. And he sat there at the beginning, and we do a little bit of registration. And he said at the beginning, he said, Sid, he said, I won't last. He said, I've never sat longer than about 20 minutes, half an hour. He said, I've got ADD, ADHD, everything, you know, whatever. And I said to him, no problem at all. I said, you know, if you want to get up, walk around the room. I said, you can't leave, because obviously all the doors are locked and stuff, all the rest of it, but please do. And then at the end of the day, I said, you've done pretty well, haven't you? And he goes, yeah. And he said, fuck me. He said, I've never done that. Anyway, so that night I left the prison, and I was staying in a kind of travel lodge nearby. And on the way back, I popped into Cheshire Oaks, and in there's like a really cool bookshop, and in it's like, you know, these colouring in books where they've like lots of patterns and stuff. I bought one of those and these really cool kind of felt tip pens, big kind of deck of all the rest of it. And the next day, got back into the prison, got back into the learning room, and I put this colouring in book with the pens on top of it, you know, on his desk. And I didn't say anything. Anyway, he came in and everyone sat down, and he just kind of, and I watched him, not kind of like this, but kind of, and he opened the book and he started colouring in. And again, he stayed the whole day. And on the fifth day, one of the governors came and gave them, because we give them a certificate and a book and stuff and other bits and pieces. And he said to this governor, he said, 20 minutes, half an hour is the longest I've ever been in a lesson. He said, I've done 5 days. And he'd filled out so much of this colouring book to the most beautiful detail. It was wonderful. And again, it's like he'd been kicked out of school. He'd been excluded. He'd been sent down for many, many things. And you can create, or you can get people to access their magic by finding them on their terms, or meeting them on their terms. And, you know, another wonderful story.
Yeah, that's a really powerful message, because so many times, even myself, I'm saying as if I'm perfect, especially myself. I speak to people like I want to be spoken to, which is very grammatically correct. Or I give gifts that I want to receive and then get disappointed if they don't respond how I would. But if we actually treated people the way they wanted to, that's the goal, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, every single one of us, you know, as I said, we're energy and matter, you know, the matter part, similar. The energy part, completely different. And we're also unique, but we seem to homogenize, you know, as we develop as a nation, we seem to homogenize everything. Oh, you're all going to need one of them and one of them and one of them. And what's happening is everyone's going, actually, no, I'm an individual, you know.
Yeah, well, pick one of four colors. That's your profile forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd love, you know, I absolutely adore talking with you, but I'd love to ask a few specific questions, because, as you know, I ask nearly all my guests the same, and I can unpick and unravel the secret process. Well, that's the plan. But what one skill, when you look in the world today, do you think leaders need?
I think it is around emotional intelligence. I really do. I think it's that self-awareness, self-regulation, you know, the need for empathy, the need to self-motivate, but also find motivation in others, and the social skills to connect at whatever level. I think that, for me, if great leaders could have more of those attributes, and, you know, Harvard have done, you know, lots of studies, et cetera, that's what it's about. You know, I know, because the thing is that in order to lead others, you have to lead yourself. You can't do one and the other. I mean, you really can't. And I know that from my own, you know, experience, is that by knowing, well, it's that thing, isn't it? Know thyself. The only way to know thyself is to truly know thyself. You know, and Marcus Aurelius, you know, brilliant, you know, meditations that have been kind of translated. Same thing, know thyself. You know, that for me is greatest leadership, is to know thyself.
Yeah. Yeah. Start at home, isn't it? As we were saying all along, really.
Yeah.
And what do you follow more personally? Is it logic or intuition?
Oh, intuition. Oh, yeah, absolutely intuition. There's a brilliant guy, actually, Kevin Roberts, and he used to be the global CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi Worldwide, and he wrote this amazing book called Love Marks. And he talked about the kind of difference between logic and emotion when we're making decisions on stuff. And it's like something like 95% of our decisions are emotional. There's only 5% based on logic. And you kind of go, yeah. And that's the thing, you know, so Ken Roberts talked about it, about that brilliant TED talk that he did about, you know, are schools killing creativity? We're intuitive beings. We feel, you know, we're logical, yes, but that's nothing. You know, it's like, for instance, I mean, what is the logic about Kate Strong sitting on a bike for 24 hours? What's the logic in that? I mean, there is none. It's nuts. It's completely nuts. But what's the reason behind that? It's completely intuition. It's emotion. It's in everything else. So yeah, intuition every day.
Yeah, wonderful. Man after my own heart. And how do you deal with failure and not achieving your goals?
Lovely question. I'm going to do a talk actually on the word meaning. And yeah, there's a brilliant guy, I met him years ago, called Professor Anthony Grayling, and he wrote this amazing book called The Meaning of Things, of which a friend of mine told me to kind of read. And that was a real kind of sea change and kind of shift in my life. But what's really interesting is that, you know, when we talk about, you know, the kind of the word you know, we put meaning into things, don't we? And again, failure is just a word. It's just a word. And the thing is that it's a pretty hard word. And in a way, it's how we interpret that word, isn't it? You know, they say that, you know, coming second, you know, is failure. It's not. It's the fact that you kind of competed or you did whatever. So failure to me doesn't exist anymore because I can't fail because I'm in it. And I think when, you know, when I get a setback or something happens, I don't get a job or I don't get a something or the rest of it, everything happens for a reason. And I think it's like I don't like the word normal. What the hell does normal mean? And also it starts with two letters called no. So clearly it must be wrong. And again, it's just that meaning, isn't it? You know, failure in one country is opportunity in another. So it doesn't register really.
Yeah. I personally wouldn't judge a word by its first few letters because you are mad if we did that. But yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah.
That's right.
Completely. And, you know, let me ask you a question then. What is failure at life?
I think I keep talking about people, but people who've really influenced my life. So a guy called David Goggins, American guy, wrote a book a couple of years ago called Can't Hurt Me, which is just awesome. What I love about him is he talks about the 40%, and he said most people are kind of living their life, you know, at 40% of capacity. You know, most people living their life with their brakes on. I think failure in life is to get to the end of your life and to maybe meet your maker and to, for him, her to say to you, so look at all the stuff that you could have achieved. What actually did you achieve? That for me is a real kind of knock on the door moment, really, is that none of us know what we're truly capable of. And I think that every day is that opportunity to, and I don't mean to kind of, you know, to go and walk on the moon or kind of do that, but to really push yourself. And yeah, you'll have bad days where there'll be setbacks, but on the whole, it's just, you know, keep pushing forward, really.
Yeah, completely. And just to bring because you know me, I kind of push the envelope a little bit, quite a bit. I don't do it to be the best. I'm doing it to find my glass ceiling because I don't know what the potential is. So I'm following what you're saying is I don't know where I can fail, but I know if I play it safe, I never will. So I'm actually trying to set myself up for failure if you want. But to me, that is life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of saying I want to die living. And it's true. I do. I want to get, you know, I mean, for me, I always play forward where I sort of think forward about, you know, my children at my funeral. And I might, for some, it might sound a bit macabre, but I want them to be there and go, I'll cry, but we loved him and he brought joy and he was funny and that he believed that everything was possible. And I don't mean that they can become, I don't know, a world leader, but just to believe in better, you know, to have that wonderful word called hope, you know, to take that away and we're no longer beings, we're just, you know, we're just things.
Yeah, yeah. I think if more of us operated as in what people would say after our passing, we'd be nicer people.
I mean, there's a great saying, isn't there? If the words that you use were tattooed on your body, would you still be beautiful? Yeah. And I know that if I know that they would burn me as a heretic. That's for sure. And I think it's little things like that, and that's where my children are such a brilliant mirror. I don't treat them as children. I don't believe they are children. They're just. And it was interesting a few months ago actually. They were in the bath. So Freddie and Bea were in the bath, and I sit there and watch them because they're just a riot. I mean, they just do crazy stuff. And I was sitting there and I always say to them, hey guys, and not that it's not a girl thing or a guy thing, it's just, hey guys. I said, I've got to say that I couldn't be happier right now. And Freddie said, are you? And I said, yeah, I just love you both so much. And obviously little Florence wasn't there because she was too little to be in the bar. And Freddie said to me, well, if that's the case, Daddy, why do you shout at us? And I said to him, I don't shout at you much. And he said, yeah, but you do. And it really got me thinking. And I kind of went, he's absolutely right. Now I don't shout at all. And I said to him actually on Sunday, I said, Daddy doesn't shout anymore. And he said, no. And I said, you know why? He said, no. I said, it's because you said that I did. And I don't want you to remember me for shouting. I'll tell him off. Because we had a little fire and he started putting stuff on the fire when I wasn't there. And that's kind of dangerous. But shouting's like, what's that saying about me? And again, it's that reflective moment where they are our greatest teachers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have children myself, but I remember one day, it must have been a very surreal day, because I was looking at this child and I got this image that you're the future. I'm looking into the eyes of a leader who will be not telling me what to do, but leading me into out of these problems of today. And after that, I could never operate like kids for kids, because they were here to guide me. And so they are definitely from the future, even though they're in the present.
Yeah, and you look at, you know, Greta Thunberg, and you look at Amanda Gorman, you know, that amazing speech that she read out of Joe Biden's kind of inauguration, you know, The Hill We Climb. Wow, that thinking is like, that's where the world needs to get to. It's like, you know, I think all the leaders should kind of resign and let the kids take over. I do. It's like they would make a far better job than we're kind of, the adults really have made.
Well, they can't make it any worse, can they?
True.
Yeah. And we haven't really covered this on today, but it's something that, you know, I'm really passionate about, because a lot of what I'm doing in sport is to highlight equal opportunities. And I can't champion what I see as a misreflection if I'm not doing something in action, in positivity either. So I'm here to sort of say we are missing women in sport, but I'm also stepping up to make sure I'm filling at least one of those gaps. What can you do to fill the others? So what one step can you think we as a community can take towards creating equal opportunities for both genders?
Ah, brilliant question. I think that recognize that whatever gender you are, whatever, you know, whatever choices that you've made, is that each human being is capable of the same extraordinary things, and that base your choice on merit and base it on capability, not on gender or anything like that. It's rubbish. I mean, it really is. I mean, one of the things that really shocked me, so I mean, as you know, I do loads of reading, and I've gone back, you know, however many decades and thousands of years and stuff, and I was really shocked that I could only find one female philosopher. You know, we know about Plato and Aristotle and all of those people, but there was only one, and I find that so sad, was that so much for hundreds and hundreds of years, our thinking has been all male-led and all male-dominated, and it's just nuts. It really is. So for me, I would want more people to read about Marie Curie, Helen Keller, all those incredible people. Louise Hay, who I think actually was the first modern age person who invented the self-help movement. I really do believe that. I really do. I mean, and I know there's Tony Robbins and Robin Sharma and Natalie Harrington. She was there well before all of them. And I think it's to recognize of those missing gaps to go, actually, no, there was some incredible thinking. And to recognize that there is parity. We have to have that parity.
Yeah, and just to bring up, you know, Louise Hay and Tony Robbins, and it shows what missing we have in the community is. Tony Robbins's handle is what? Unleash the Power Within. That's his biggest selling thing. Louise Hay is about heal the power from within. So it's the same, but we need both. We cannot keep growing if we're still broken and damaged and hurt inside, but we can't heal it if we're not in action. So let's bring the two together.
And that's where that's what I love about kind of men and women. We are different. I mean, we do think differently. We do respond to stuff differently. And that's what I love, is that yin and yang of, like, you can't, it's like we need each other. You know, we desperately do. And that's such a great parallel, isn't it? Kind of Tony Robbins and kind of Louise Hay, you know, and that's a really good parallel.
Yeah, well, you brought it up and I saw the goal to put them together. Yeah. So why should businesses, why should communities, schools, etc. care about equal opportunities?
Because if we don't, we're going to have more of the same. You know, it's the same with colour. It's like there is no difference. We have to create a society which is equal in every way, that there is no stigmatism, there is no difference. There isn't. There is no difference. Mm. And that's what creates that kind of bias. And that's where, you know, Professor Andrew Grayling, you know, in his book, he talks about racism, he talks about fascism, he talks about separatism, he talks about all of those things. And it's wrong. I mean, any kind of prejudice is wrong. It just is. And I used to wear glasses, you know, when I was a kid, and I used to have little metal kind of, they were bendy arms here, and I used to get flicked and missed four eyes, and people used to nick me glasses and stuff, all the rest of it. Any difference that people kind of exploit is wrong. It just is, whether it's to do with women or you know, hair colour, eye colour. It's just wrong. That's what we have to get rid of. We just do. And that's why communities, you know, I see it in the playgrounds where kids won't play with other kids because one's got long hair and they call the boy a sissy and all that kind of stuff. And that's learned. All of that stuff's learned. We have to unlearn that. We have to unpack that and go, no, it's not acceptable. And that's what I love about, you know, Disney. You know, Disney's now creating films where, you know, there are, you know, the girls are the heroes and, you know, they're the, you know, they solve the problems and stuff. And it's all of that stuff, all of that book, all of those books and, you know, gender bias around colour. It's like, no, let's not teach any of that stuff. You know, and Freddie's got fairly long hair. I mean, I hadn't had mine cut for a year because of COVID. But, you know, the thing is with Freddie, it's that, you know, he likes the colour green. He likes dressing up in girls' clothes. Oh, I'm going to stop him. No, because that's him expressing himself and that's how it should be.
Yeah. Because otherwise we're burying it deep inside and it's going to bottle and it's going to come out in some toxic way for him to hurt himself. Not physically, but just it'll hurt him by not being himself.
Yeah,
so true. So thank you for bringing your life to this as well, for making it real in your personal journey, because it is so refreshing to hear that you haven't got your shit together, that you still struggle, that even though you're striving for greatness, you are a human being who whinges and complains and gets it wrong and shouts at his kids and then stops shouting at his kids. And, you know, this is a learning journey and it will never end until we're dead. And even then, I'm sure it'll be another learning journey. So, yeah, thank you.
And it's so, I mean, the thing is that, you know, it's so funny, isn't it? I remember a couple of years ago, I was invited down to the South and I was giving a kind of a talk, a taste of kind of me to these heads of HR and I mean, from big companies. So Sky and a few others, right? And the thing is that we had a reflective on day two. It was a 2-day kind of thing. So on day two, we had a reflection where we went around the table and said, you know, any thoughts? And the thing that I said is, I said, the thing that's great about this, I said, none of you got your shit together. I said, you might be paid, you know, 6-figure salaries, but none of you got your shit together. So let's just start there. Let's just be honest, shall we? And it was really funny. There were a couple of people who really took that to heart and got really quite aggressive. And you kind of go, there you go. What's it saying?
Yeah. Well, what we resist persists as well. So yeah, awesome. I'm going to remember doing that next time. And what keeps you motivated every day?
I mean, one, my children, to play out to the kind of my funeral. I mean, I've done some pretty bad stuff in my life in terms of, you know, kind of drink drugs and kind of not treated people well. I always think that my life's kind of soap opera, but nobody's told me that I'm in it. But what I love is that all the mistakes that I have made, and I know that I said I don't think of mistakes as mistakes, but they teach you something. And I think if you can take those lessons and if you can, I mean, it is that groundhog thing. If you keep on repeating it, you know, what persists, or what was it? What will you resist persists? If you don't learn from that, then you're pretty dumb. And what I love is that every day is different. Every day is an opportunity to reset. And you can find joy and love and understanding. You can find all the good stuff. You can find all the love stuff. You can find the fear stuff if you want to. But actually, for me, it's that every day is an opportunity to be a better person, to be a better Sid, to be a better Kate, or be a better Bilbo, or whatever.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I was going to ask you, what one message would you like to leave us with? But that sounds pretty cool, unless you've got another gem you'd like to say.
No, I think it is that we can choose to be better. It's our lives are our choice. You know, it's a decision that we get every day. You know, it's down to us. You know, when things don't go well, it's down to us. Nobody else. You know, take that responsibility. And, you know, it's like David Goggins says, own your shit. You know, if you're fat, you're fat. I mean, I used to be very overweight and I used to blame it. I used to be able to blame it on everybody else. Own your shit. It's like, no, you know, that's your stuff. Deal with it. And if you don't know how to deal with it, there are many millions of people out there who can help you. So deal with that.
Yeah, really wise words. Well, Sid, we could talk for hours. We've already been talking well over an hour. Thank you so much. For everyone listening, your website is me.global, and me's got 3 E's. And I'll share loads of other links to your books and to your TEDx talk as well. So, yeah, as always, thank you so much. Huge insights.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for inviting me. God bless.
Bye.
If you like to support the work I do, then please subscribe, rate and comment on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher and anywhere else you found this podcast. And if you are ready to step up and into your greatness, then please connect with me. Send me an email, kate@katestrong.global, and start your journey today. Thank you, and until the next episode, keep in positive action.